It's the Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC. I'm Richard Hake in for Leonard today. A major oxygen-depleted dead zone has returned to the Gulf of Mexico this year. It's killing marine life and damaging the region's already fragile economy. We're joined now by Dr. Nancy Rabelais, chief scientist of the Louisiana Marine Consortium, and she is here to help us explain the causes and consequences of dead zones, especially in the Gulf of Mexico. Welcome to today's Backstory segment here on WNYC.
Thank you very much. It's nice to be here.
Weren't you just out on the Gulf taking samples of the water? What did you find?
Yes, we got back in Sunday morning real early. We've been out about 8 days. We basically mapped the area where this low oxygen is found along the Louisiana coastline and sometimes into Texas, and we found a large area, larger than average, but not the record size that we expected this year because of all of the Mississippi River flooding.
Now, can you give us a sense of what the ocean floor looks like when it's healthy and what it looks like when these low-oxygen dead zones appear? I mean, we're probably all familiar with seeing those pictures after that oil spill, the oil spill that happened there last year.
Right.
But what does a healthy ocean floor look like?
Right. Well, one of the issues with this low-oxygen area offshore and people's understanding of it is that you can't really see it, because it's offshore and underwater, and it's not like an oil spill that comes onto the beaches. But normally, on the bottom, you would find healthy fish swimming around, healthy brown shrimp, white shrimp. They would be burrowed in the sediments, and at night they would come up and, you know, sift through the sediments looking for food. There'd be starfish and snails and clams and all kinds of animals that would live on the bottom. But when the oxygen goes below 2, which is our cutoff, all of the fish near the bottom that can swim will swim out. All of the shrimp that are down there, they normally live in the mud, but they do have the capability of swimming up into the water and moving away. So anything that can swim tries to get out of the area. And then anything that remains, the starfish, the snails, the clams, the worms that live in the sediments, they cannot escape, and they will eventually die off.
I also want to bring in our next guest, Matt Rota, who is the Director of Science and Water Policy at the Gulf Restoration Network. He's here with us as well to help explain the causes and consequences of dead zones. Matt, can you tell us how the size and scope of this year's dead zone compares to years past?
Sure, and I'm sorry for coming in late, so if Nancy covered some of this stuff already, I apologize. But this isn't the biggest dead zone we've ever seen, but it is well above the average. And if you look at how things are trending, we are still not going in a good direction as far as reducing the size of the dead zone. The average right now is higher than it has been in the past, and the size of the dead zone is well over what it was when Nancy started measuring it back in 1985. So we're definitely not going in the right direction with the goal of reducing the size of the dead zone.
So can a dead zone actually expand faster than the marine life can swim out of it?
With that, I would probably defer to Nancy for that question.
Right. I think some of the fish that are really good swimmers can swim away pretty quickly. I think some of the things like the shrimp, I do know they move inshore and offshore and up into the water column, but if they swim up into the water column, they're more likely to get eaten by a fish or something.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, what self-respecting fish wouldn't want to take advantage of a poor stressed brown shrimp up in the water column.
So do you think this affects crustaceans more than the fish?
Crustaceans are less able to move, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. But, I mean, we still find numbers inshore and offshore. Along with the fish, move inshore and offshore as well.
Does low oxygen water cause any other physiological harm to the fish?
Well, there's some really interesting current research that's been conducted by researchers at the University of Texas that have shown that these low oxygen values stress the fish and the shrimp and affect reproduction. And one of their most recent papers on the croaker, which is a fish that lives near the bottom, is that when exposed to lower levels of oxygen on the periphery of this low oxygen area, that the females actually become transformed into males. And so they're no longer producing eggs, which would provide recruits back to the population. So it's definitely affecting the physiology and reproductive ecology of these organisms.
You mentioned earlier the oxygen level going below 2. We have a caller who wonders what that is. What happens is you have a different measurements of the amount of oxygen that's in the water?
Right. We have instruments that we lower through the water column, and they tell us the depth and the salinity and the temperature and also the dissolved oxygen value. And you can start at the surface with well-oxygenated waters at 8 to 10. The unit is milligrams per liter or parts per million. And you get about halfway down in the water column, say you're in 65 feet of water, and at 30 feet you start to lose the oxygen, and by the time you get to the bottom, there's just no oxygen left. And 2 is our observational cutoff definition, because if a shrimp trawler puts a net over the side, he won't pull in any shrimp if the oxygen is less than 2.
So how do these dead zones actually form? You mentioned agricultural runoff.
Right. Well, the formation depends on 2 things, and both of them depend on the Mississippi River. The first one is the amount of fresh water that comes out, because it is basically lighter than the salty water, and it forms a lens over the bottom. You know, the upper part of the water column is just different than the bottom part, and the oxygen from the surface can't move to the bottom. And the other thing that the river brings in are nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus that, similar to fertilizers put on corn, when they get into the Gulf of Mexico, they stimulate the growth of the single-celled phytoplankton, the micro algae, and they bloom to such an extent that the fish and the zooplankton can't keep up with it, and it falls to the bottom, and then bacteria eat it up and use up all the oxygen.
Did the recent flooding out west and along the Mississippi River have any effect on this?
Well, we anticipated an effect. The best predictor of the size is the amount of nitrogen that gets to the Gulf in May. So based on that, we predicted the largest size ever, up to about 26,000 square kilometers, and it was 17,500 instead. We did see the effects of the flood in June and early July, but by the time we got out to measure this year's low oxygen area, one of the things that we also found was Tropical Storm Dawn that sort of went west along the Gulf of Mexico while we were going west doing our mapping, and it sort of stirred up the water, which means the high oxygen in the surface got to the bottom. And so the map itself was not as large. The footprint, the area on the bottom, was not as large as we anticipated.
Could it be said that because corn production has been increased in the Midwest over the past few decades, that this could be perhaps one of the causes? Corn does need a lot of fertilizer, I'm to believe. Is that right?
Right. Well, the biggest change in the watershed has been the increase in nitrogen, and that's directly correlated with the amount of fertilizer used. So the increase in crop row production of corn and fertilizer over the last, I guess, probably 5 years has sort of put more nitrogen per volume of water, so it's definitely a factor.
And Matt, let's bring you in on this. Where in the Gulf is the dead zone most acute right now? Where's the big problems?
Well, the dead zone pretty much stretches across the shelf of Louisiana. I don't want to put words in Nancy's mouth, but they also found it east of the Mississippi River, along the shores of Mississippi and Alabama. So while they didn't see as much impact to the west, there is that added concern of seeing more of a dead zone forming to the east of the river. So it impacts the entire, at least the entire length of Louisiana.
And how are the shrimpers and the other fishermen dealing with this, considering that they had so much problem with the oil spill as well?
It's been a tough time. Louisiana is an ecosystem in peril. And the BP oil disaster was basically the latest insult. We have catastrophic land loss. We have this formation of this growing dead zone every year, and then we had the BP oil disaster. And some of the people that bear the brunt of all of those are the people that rely on the coast for their livelihoods, our shrimpers and are oystermen, and they're having a really tough time at this. So because even if the dead zone doesn't kill off their catch, depending on the size of the dead zone, they'll have to travel farther to make their catch, and that means using up more diesel. And with the fuel prices that they are right now, and the shoestring budgets they're operating, and with just the environmental disaster after environmental disaster they've experienced in the past 6 years, that we need to start getting a handle on the dead zone to at least try and reduce one of these major stresses to our fisheries.
We are speaking with Matt Rota, Director of Science and Water Policy at the Gulf Restoration Network, and Dr. Nancy Rabelais, Chief Scientist at the Louisiana Marine Consortium on the Gulf of Mexico's increasing dead zone. And Matt, I guess you said 17,000 square kilometers. That's huge. That's the size of a state, right?
Yeah, that's about it's about 1,000 square miles larger than Connecticut. So if that puts it into perspective, and if you just think of if one of the issues with the dead zone is that it happens offshore, so it's a lot of out of sight, out of mind. But if you can imagine an area in a relatively unpopulated area of the United States the size of Connecticut that didn't have enough oxygen, that all of the wildlife had to flee and people that depend on that wildlife were impacted, our nation, that would be considered a national issue, and we would be putting amazing amounts of resources to fix that. But because it's off the coast, and Louisiana's kind of just been the nation's sacrifice zone in a lot of ways, we're just seeing it languish and balloon to even bigger sizes depending on the year.
So is there any kind of financial support coming from either the federal government or state government or anywhere?
There is some report. For example, the USDA has what they call the Mississippi River Basin Initiative, which is trying to start focusing on reducing some of the polluted runoff from farm fields throughout the Mississippi River Basin. But it's not enough to really start addressing the problem. And that's one of the things we've been fighting for, is that a National Academy of Sciences report came out back in 2008, calling the Mississippi River an orphan because nobody wants to take responsibility for it.
So, you know, do you think the EPA is taking dead zone seriously?
The EPA has made some strides, but as far as I'm concerned, they have not stepped up to as much as they should with this task. In fact, the Gulf Restoration Network works with a group called the Mississippi River Basin or the Mississippi River Collaborative, and we petitioned EPA for them to use the Clean Water Act to develop a cleanup plan with numeric goals of how much they need to reduce the nitrogen phosphorus pollution in the Mississippi River and the Gulf. And last week they denied that petition. They feel what they're doing is adequate, even though haven't seen any reduction in the size of the dead zone on average.
And Nancy, is there any way to fix this other than cutting down fertilizer coming down the Mississippi?
Well, the majority of the inputs definitely come from agricultural practices, either livestock or fertilizer applications. So and we also have some atmospheric fallout that basically comes from burning fossil fuels. So in many ways, we can reduce our carbon footprint and our nitrogen footprint by driving more fuel-efficient cars and driving less and some of the other things that we just need to do for good ecology.
And
some of the wastewater treatment plants in the cities can be upgraded. The amount of wastewater treatment that contributes to the low oxygen is fairly small compared to other sources, but it's still another way we could approach the problem.
And just finally, is there a tipping point where a large enough dead zone or one that is present for a long enough period of time can lead to a total ecosystem collapse?
I would not predict that. There have been areas in the Baltic or the Black Sea where subsystems of those areas have had pretty severe ecological collapse and loss of fisheries. The Gulf is a fairly open system and fairly resilient, but we're not at our limit yet, that's for sure. And we do have some resources, definitely have resources at risk.
I've been speaking with Dr. Nancy Rabelais, chief scientist at the Louisiana Marine Consortium, and Matt Rota, director of science and water policy at the Gulf Restoration Network, about the oxygen-depleted area that's reappeared in the Gulf of Mexico. That's today's backstory segment. Thank you for joining us, both of you.
Thank you, Richard.